An individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust, and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice, is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And that quote comes from Martin Luther King Jr. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, what is law, folks? What is law, and what is statute law? And where does it all come from? And how did we get into the position that we are in today, where we are subject to all of these statutes and ridiculous pieces of legislation that are enacted by our governments? And what is the purpose of all this stuff, folks? I actually believe that the purpose of it is to enslave society and to remove society from natural law. And that seems to be very much what's happening. There are a lot of people out there in the world today that are looking into the law, and the veil of secrecy seems to be falling away, and people are beginning to realize what's actually going on in our court and legal system. There are many people that have been down different rabbit holes in an attempt to find out exactly what's going on. I've done so myself. We have like the free man movement. We have people looking into sovereignty. We have people looking into constitutional law. And what we are discovering is that once you have gone down all these different avenues and become lost in all the different rabbit holes that are available to you, what you find is the highest harmonic of all law, and that is what is known as trust law. And folks, trust law is actually what is being carried out around the world today in all of our legal systems, and we have never really been made aware of it. But once you do become aware that the basis of our entire legal system lies in trust law, and you gain a basic understanding of trust law, you find that it is in trust law that the remedy lies, the remedy to all of the problems that we face. And when you really do begin to adjust your perspective of things, what you find is that trust law is not really that difficult to get your head around. And there have been quite a large number of people that have been appearing online lately that have been presenting their perspective of trust law. And one that I found quite recently, which laid it all out very clearly in the most simplest of terms, was a man from Canada by the name of Dean Clifford. And so I've got Dean as a guest on the show today because I think what Dean brings to the table is very worth listening to. We've got a lot to cover today, and so without further ado, we may as well get straight into the conversation. And so, Dean Clifford, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Max.
You've made a really big impact with the videos that you put out on YouTube, which has put a very, very clear understanding of trust law in people's minds. You've explained it in a very simplistic way. You've been able to identify with corporate law, which is a really, really great way of doing it, and how it all relates back to the Holy Trinity. And it's ridiculously simple when you look at it in the way that you presented it. And that's a really great thing, I think. And so congratulations on that. And it's really nice to talk to you. What actually started you on this path where you found out all this stuff and saw what was going on?
Well, I think the beginning is like a lot of people out there when you have your first bad run-in with, in Canada especially, with Canada Revenue Agency, and that would have been about 15 years ago for me now. Maybe a little more than that, actually. I think 16 years ago when I first started a company there just doing some work around Winnipeg and whatnot, and I had my first bad run-in with CRA, and that turned into a four-year running battle with them where I had no idea what was going on. And then you start doing the research online, and you start learning a little bit here and there, and you come to your first realization that the name on the birth certificate is not you. And, you know, I think you have your first epiphany at that point when you understand the implications of all this, and that turns into another 10 years of reading and research and higher education, I guess you could call it, where you're just absorbing every piece of information you can get online, and you're going sifting through the nonsense and trying to see what makes sense to you before you get the big picture, which I guess we have done in the last couple of years here. Finally got it all together, and now we're all about getting the information out there to people, making it as simple as possible, simple for the masses, simple for anybody to be able to understand. So that everybody can start kind of taking control of their lives here and start administrating for themselves.
Well, yeah, there is an awful lot of disinformation out there regarding this stuff as well. I mean, I've been down a lot of the rabbit holes myself, went down, looked at all the Freeman stuff, looked at the constitutional stuff, started getting into the trust law. When you start getting into trust law and you start gaining a real understanding of the power of equity, it really is an eye-opener. But even in that, there is a lot of disinformation out there. There's a lot of really complicated explanations out there of how this works. And that's what I like about what you've done. You've just simplified it brilliantly.
Oh, I appreciate that. I think that's a big part of it, too, is like you said, is they... I just had a thought there and I kind of lost it. But to do with... when you get into the arguments with the people here, the courts and whatnot, and the whole point is to keep things simple, and the point of everything they're doing is to try to keep you arguing and keep you confused.
Well, also, if you're arguing in court, then how much power are you demonstrating that you have?
You're being subservient if you're arguing in court.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if you have established yourself as the sole holder of yourself, the sole shareholder of yourself, and the administrator of your own trust, if you will, then you're not there to argue. You're there to set policy. If you're the head of a corporation, you don't go to work to argue with your employees. You go to work to tell them what you want done. So there's no point in arguing.
No, yeah, them keeping you there and arguing is no different than being at like a garage sale where you're up at the table and you find an interesting item and you ask how much and they tell you, you know, and then you say, no, I'm not interested, but you stand there and talk with them for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So just by arguing in court, that's why a lot of people are learning this stuff and they're wanting to go to court and they're wanting to argue with the judges. You know, I'm going to go to court and I'm going to stand there and I'm going to tell the judge that he has no jurisdiction over me and I'm not subject to his authority. And the judge is looking at you going, well, if you're not under my jurisdiction, what are you doing in my court?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've shown yourself to be incompetent even by being there and thinking that you have to argue with this guy.
Yeah, the only argument I can make to the contrary on that is me, like many other people, we've been in the situation where we really had no choice because they actually come and they physically beat you up at some point to bring you there.
Oh, yeah.
But at that point, it gets really simple because I think I covered that in one of the videos where people don't understand the fact that you have to get everything that ever happens to you on the record, which means if you're being beaten and physically harmed to show up there, then you better be swearing out an affidavit of that and putting it into the court file, or that better be the first thing out of your mouth after you say, I'm convening a court of record and I was physically beaten until I showed up here today.
Yeah, well, that's a different thing. I mean, obviously, if you're arrested and dragged into the court, then you've got to establish your authority from that point, you know, and don't offer a plea, establish yourself as the administrator of the account.
Absolutely.
And do it from that point. That's if you're dragged physically in there. But if you sent a summons to go to court and you think, okay, well, I'm gonna get this summons and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna challenge their jurisdiction. Well, for a start, you can't challenge their jurisdiction in their court. And there's no point going there and claiming that they have no jurisdiction over you because you went down there willingly. What are you doing there if they got no jurisdiction? And like you say, it is different if they drag you in.
And not only that, but your problem isn't with the court anyways. Your problem was with the person who brought you there.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be the Crown in Australia and Canada, and that would be the state prosecutor in the United States. Your problem isn't with the court yet. Your problem was with the guy who brought the charge to the court claiming to have jurisdiction over you. That's your problem.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people are missing in the whole thing, I think. And it's a different way of looking at it. But I've often said there's no point trying to fight the system. The system's got bigger teeth. What you have to do is realize the system is fictional and how to disconnect yourself from the system. And knowing how it works and knowing how the corporate structure works and knowing that what they're doing in court is actually performing trust law, but they're not telling you about it, it is incredibly empowering. And that is your way out. And the way out, is in your birth certificate. There's a lot of people who are very, very scared of the birth certificate. There's even movements that are looking into equity and trust law.
that understand that what they're doing in the courts is trust law. Understanding it goes way back to the church. It goes back to the Vatican. This is another big, huge rabbit hole. If you look at the three trusts that have actually been set up to deal with your birth certificate and your legal person, that's a whole other rabbit hole to go down. But there's people that are actually going out there and they're taking steps to create their own birth certificate and all this sort of stuff, and to completely remove themselves from the trust agreement they have from the government. But really, the birth certificate actually gives you the power to hold the government accountable for their actions. So why would you want to dissolve that trust? Because if you do, it just leaves them to run riot. They can just do what they want. Okay, you're not part of the system, but we're still going to do this, and we're still going to trash the rest of the world. We're still going to go and have all these illegal wars, and you don't have any say about it because you've removed yourself from the arrangement.
Yeah, and right now you've got the biggest say because you are the one who put the equity into the legal person. So the birth certificate becomes your receipt for the equity. And if you don't want to learn trust law and you find it too complicated and you don't just want to get into the argument and that all this stuff scares you, you're not somebody that handles, you know, situations where you're being confronted, especially in court, very well, then you can simply just maintain the position of the equity holder, the investor in the corporation. And when you show up in court, you can just say, hey, I'm just here because I'm the investor / beneficiary. That's it. I've got the receipt right here. My duty, my obligation to this government started with me investing my share of the Commonwealth in it, and it ended with that action. I'm not compelled to do anything beyond that. And if anybody's claiming I am, I'd like to see them produce the contract or produce the law or produce the agreement. Produce whatever you want. You can simplify that in your argument, but that's a position of authority. I'm the investor. You guys wouldn't, there'd be nothing without me.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So that's why you want to really look at your birth certificate in a different light. You shouldn't fear this thing like people are doing. And if they do decide to remove themselves from that birth certificate and create their own, then they are removing any say they have over the actions of the government. And this is not the way to help things, I don't think. I think we need to be able to use this system to be able to change the direction that our governments are going in, because they're not going in a very good direction. And they're doing what they're doing because we've never taken this responsibility ourselves. We've never really realized that we are the ones in the driver's seat and stood in that power and actually driven the ship ourselves.
Yeah, I think the only problem at this point now with our governments and with the bank and the IMF and the whole nine yards, I think the vessel that we're going to try to take control of is the Titanic after it hit the iceberg.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So at this point, I don't think there's much to do in actually taking control of the ship and trying to steer it. I mean, we may make it go another direction for a couple of minutes, but she's going down. That much is sure at this point. So. I think the best thing for people to do, and I think we spoke about that previously in one of our conversations, is to get into the whole right back to roots, right back to basics and community again, and realize that everybody thinks that they're going to learn accepted for value, and they're going to learn all this stuff, and then they're going to make the government, take these checks or take these vouchers, and they're going to make them settle the accounts. You're not going to do anything of the sort. The system was created for them, for their benefit. They just shut us down on a whim. If you're not in the old boys club, none of this stuff is going to work for us. It never will. It wasn't created for our benefit. Technically speaking, yes, that's what the idea was. But no, obviously we know that this whole system just exists to take our energy and give it straight to the bankers. So the more energy we give it, whether it's positive or negative, whether we're just giving it the money they want or we're fighting them, they're still going to get our energy. They're still going to get it. And that's expressed in the dollars we make. It's expressed with whatever property they take. So the best bet now is just getting out altogether, I think.
Absolutely. Non-compliance. That's what I've been saying for 3 years, Dean. And that's what's so beautiful about the way you presented this, because I've been telling people that they're free, and the way to beat the system is to stop complying with it, to simply disengage from it, because you can't fight it. It's got bigger teeth. You simply disconnect from it. And I've been telling them that they're free, and now you've got this very simple diagram which says, and look, I can prove that you're free. And you've got this birth certificate which also proves that you're free. You've just got to shift your perspective on how you look at things. And that's why it was so great to find your work. I've been spreading it with to as many people as I can. So you should be getting lots of views on that by now.
Oh, yeah, no, I appreciate that. It was unexpected. I think I told you previously as well. I mean, the videos that have been taken so far, especially the first one, was just something that was recorded privately by one of the guys that comes to the meetings we just started giving, just so he could go home and watch it himself a couple of times just to make sure he got all the information through his head. And then next thing you know, they're asking me if we should post a couple on YouTube. And, you know, bam, 5 weeks later, there's 75,000 combined views on some of the videos that are on that site there. So it's amazing. I didn't know people were this starving for information, to be honest with you.
Well, they are, and it's been so confusing. And a lot of people, you know that they are free, but they just don't know how to apply it. You know, they think, well, look, I feel like I'm free, and I feel like I should be free.
Yeah.
Why aren't I? Why am I getting in trouble? How do I deal with these people? And that's another thing that people are asking as well. There's a lot of people saying, well, how does this apply in America? Because you guys are talking about Canada and Australia. And how does this apply for me if I get pulled up on the side of the road? How do I deal with a police officer on the side of the road?
Okay, with the Crown in Australia and the Crown in Canada, them being apparently like representatives of the state... it's the same thing with down in the United States, where the state prosecutor is the one bringing the charges. The state is the courts are allegedly representing the state. The witnesses are allegedly representing the state. Everybody is representing the state, but you don't even know what the state is. And in Canada, we always thought, you know, for I don't know how many years, you know, we always like to think that the Crown attorney is obviously representing the Crown, the Queen, and the Crown, and the, you know, in the Queen's courts and whatnot. And now we now know, obviously, the same in the United States, is that the Crown is actually the Crown Corporation, the inner city of London. And it's the same thing down in the States. The state is actually, you know, the United States, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. So you've got these states, and they're all states is what they are. And a state is nothing different than an e-state. They just drop the E. So, and all a state is basically the same thing as what your legal person is. It's all contracts between entities. So down in the States, when being confronted by a cop or anything like that, they're just doing the principles that we know of now. As far as they're concerned, they're asking you for a driver's license because you've got a state plate on your car, a flag that identifies your car as one of theirs. So their officer is pulling you over and asking for your driver's license. And the premise there is that you're performing some public function, some function of the government. You're handing over your driver's license. You're not rebutting anything. And so that's what's getting you into trouble in the first place. So some of the minor things people can do, especially for beginners when you're first getting pulled over, and this is by no means going to just there's no magic phrase you're going to say that the cops are just going to go, oh, man, this guy knows what's going on. We better just leave. Right? That's not what's going to happen. They're not going to become terrified of you because of your knowledge. They're going to taser you, or they're going to throw you in jail if you really want to get belligerent about it. So especially for beginners, keep your driver's license, keep your insurance, drive the speed limit. I mean, there's no reason to be speeding anywhere anyways once you realize that there's no reason for us to be rushing around making other people money. And just when you get pulled over, a couple of, you know, give them your driver's license, take the ticket, and then deal with it administratively at that point by writing no contract across it in a big red Sharpie and revoked by administrator or refused by administrator, something like that. Just, you know, write that across your tickets diagonally, all in red marker, and send it back to the State Department or whoever it is, wherever you get these tickets from down where you're supposed to show up. Those are just beginner kind of things until you get more complicated or they start to send these tickets that you've sent back to you saying, no, you're required to pay this. And that's when hopefully, if this is a few months down the road, you've learned enough to be able to realize that everything we're dealing with is contract law. So if they're giving you a ticket, it must be for a reason. Well, maybe you should ask what that reason is. Like, excuse me, what contract were you enforcing when I was issued this fine? Could you send me a copy of this contract? Are you claiming that I was performing a function of government? Because that's all government has jurisdiction over is its own employees. Government only has jurisdiction over its own business. It's no different than my business is my business, and your business is your business. The problem is the government's claiming that your business is their business. And if they're going to be doing that in court, then I'm going to want to see some evidence of that because they're the one claiming it, not me. So... that was a bit of a mouthful, but that's kind of where, like, you'll know what to say to cops when you understand what's going on.
Yeah, well, also, if you've gone through these steps that you've mentioned where you've actually sent an affidavit to the government and you've said, look, I believe that this is how the trust agreement works. I believe that I'm the sole shareholder, that I have the right to appoint my own administrator, and I'm appointing myself, and I believe you guys to be the trustees, and you send off and you don't get a reply, and you send in a certificate of default, and so you've got the government agreeing that this is what's going on. You could then take that traffic ticket and you could take copies of those forms and simply lodge it with the court and say, motion to dismiss as well. You'd be able to do it that way as well, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. We have agreement of the parties, and that's what law is, right? The contract makes the law, and law is agreement of the parties.
Yeah, so this is how you can deal with all of these statutes that are thrown at you. So if a cop comes and gives you tickets, say, yeah, okay, give me the ticket, whatever, you're just doing your job, you don't know what's going on, you're just a police officer, you know, these guys aren't exactly employed for their IQ, let's face it. I mean,
they're employed for their willingness to just kick your teeth in a moment's notice. So
yeah, basically, they follow orders and they can be prone to violence. So they're not highly intelligent. So it's not worth trying to argue on the side of the road with the police officer. Just take the ticket and deal with it administratively. And if you've already got this set up, if you've already established who and what you are with the government, and you've already claimed the administration of your trust, then there's not really a lot they can do from there, because this is the basis of their whole system, because it is all trust law.
Exactly. Because we've never actually gone back and clarified things with them, there's so many presumptions left open for court. They could presume anything at that point. So what you're describing when you start to contact the government and establish these facts between the parties is, if you want to consider that in trust law, you could say that's almost starting to set up a trust corpus, right? This is the now there's an actual body of evidence of communication between the parties where you can say, no, I never agreed to abide by your statutes. I never agreed to perform a function of government because I'm just the investor. I'm just going to chill back here and see what you guys are doing kind of thing, and monitor and vote and do whatever investors kind of do. But you absolutely want to start setting up the body of the corporation, or setting up the body of the legal person, or trust, whatever you want to call it. I try to simplify the terms, but they all mean the same thing, with minor differences. So start contacting government, registered mail, and start establishing contracts between your two parties, which are how you're going to address one another and contact one another, and let them know that you are not performing a function of government. You've never signed a contract with the government to do something for them in exchange for a paycheck. And if they're claiming anything to the contrary, they're given X amount of days to reply and respond, and they don't. So, like you say, certificate of default, you now have evidence for any kind of court action they try to take against you.
Yeah, and also if you have set up a corpus, which would be a corporation sole, I imagine, that would be a similar sort of a way of looking at
it. Equivalent, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, well, you could say, well, now we've established what the relationship is, well, when you are dealing with this all capitals legal person, this is what the function of that legal person is. And this is the trust that you have signed off on. You know, this is the trust you have to uphold, because I'm the administrator of this trust. I'm just now that I've come to the age of majority, I've decided that I'm going to change a few policies, and this is the policies of this trust.
Yeah, when you want to do business with me, it's going to be on my terms, and these are my terms. And if you don't like those, then we're not going to be doing much business together, other than the fact that I'm still the investor in your corporation, right?
Yeah. No,
so
that's.
I don't wish to expand on this relationship because you guys don't want, because you refuse to, you don't want to do business by my rules. And I only do business by my rules. So have a good day.
I think it's break time here now, folks. So we'll have to leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. And I'll be back in a few minutes. We're talking with Dean Clifford. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, folks. We are here having a conversation today with Dean Clifford. And the topic that we are covering today is trust law.
So listen, if you set up a fee schedule with the government, a lot of people have been talking about fee schedules. How do you enforce a fee schedule?
I mean, that's still a source of many conversations yet, but there's a lot of different things that we've been trying recently now that we know what's going on. I can tell you that commercial remedies, like commercial liens, work to the extent that they're simply a stage in a process. And that process ultimately, unless it looks like we're probably going to be taking these all to Queen's Bench, we have a few in Queen's Bench right now. We've started collection on a number of these lawsuits against the government, because Queen's Bench in Canada and Australia is the same thing as it is in the United Kingdom, which is your common law remedy court. If you just read up on the act that created that court, it's just replete with references to common law. So if you bring your common law contract argument into that court, it's going to be heard. And if you've already won it before you go there, you're only going to be there to get a rubber stamp for default judgment from the courts, which is a public recognition of, if you have a commercial lien, an already existing private commercial lien. So that's what I've done in a number of them now. I have, where I live, they're known as personal property registry filings against the government that are the public declaration of a private commercial lien that I've already perfected in the private. And now the only step left to that process is taking your already perfected process into a common law court like Queen's Bench where it can be enforced. And so we're navigating a lot of that right now, and what we've found so far is that the government doesn't even reply to these claims, even when they're properly filed, because they know they have no argument. They know you've won, and they're not going to want to get anything on the record. So this seems to be the way that I would recommend people go. I've tried the banking route. I've tried issuing notes that draw on these liens that banks can use and deposit, and tried getting into with the bankers and stuff like that, and they're just not interested. They're probably told by higher up not to do anything, not to talk, not to look at your paperwork or anything like that. So I don't think that even the private bankers are going to be much of a solution for us. It's going to have to be it's going to have to be the courts that are provided for us, which is the only common law forum where your remedy is going to be.
Okay, so no one's actually had any success in getting any pain.
If they have, they're not talking.
Yeah, okay.
But the successes that we've had is we've got two of them right now in the courts where they keep backing up the date for the judge to actually award default judgment for a very large sum of money, and the judge is even starting to get tired of the antics being done by the Crown here because they're filing nothing. They keep filing motions that are to the extent of basically, well, there's no defense, there's no facts, the Crown's not claiming that you're wrong, they're just trying to say that your claim is frivolous and vexatious or something stupid like that, which, as far as I'm concerned, that's an abusive process to even file a motion like that. So we're getting there, and ultimately, like I said, I'm not going to be disappointed if we get to the end of what we believe is our remedy. There's no other place to go and nothing happens, because that's pretty much what I'm expecting at this point. No matter what we ever do to these people, again, that's that whole the monopoly board goes back in the box when you're done, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something I've been trying to suggest with people as well. It isn't about extracting money out of them. It's simply, you know, removing yourself from their authority and holding them accountable for their actions, basically. I mean, I don't have any problem with government. I think we need some form of infrastructure. We need some form of administration because we've got 7 billion people in the world. We've got roads and schools and, you know, airports and, you know, farms and food to transport and all this stuff that we do. So we need someone to administer all this for us. So I don't want to see the system just come crashing down. But what I want to see is the government's acting as our administrative arm like they're supposed to do, what we employ them to do. You know, we employ them to do all these things, to collect the garbage and create roads and stuff for us. But we don't employ them to enact all of these losses of rights and all this legislation and all this stuff that they subject us to. So that's
I'd be more than happy with a government that did its job and was responsible and, you know, protected us from the corporations. And the idea behind that being, you know, it gets a little, you know where the cards are when you got a government that's telling you that because of their global warming hoax, that, you know, you should be you should have these fluorescent light bulbs because you're the reason that we got global warming. Meanwhile, there's no regulation at all in these corporations that are poisoning the living shit out of the planet.
Well, that's the thing as well, and even with the wasteful nature of our societies and our throwaway societies, I mean, we only consume the stuff that our government has allowed to get out there, that they all told us it was safe to consume and that this is what the way we should be going. We employ them to ensure that we have a viable future. We expect them to do that. So then they start cutting corners and making things as pollutive as possible, and then they blame us for it. But we're not the ones that were in control. They were. So how are we to blame for any of it? All we did was consume the stuff that they told us it was safe to consume. And now they say, well, now that you've done all that, we're going to have to repress you people and make you use these little fluorescent light bulbs and put carbon tax in everything you do, but we're still going to allow these corporations to continue the way they are going. So it's a complete joke. It absolutely is. They've just introduced carbon tax here in Australia, actually.
Yeah, I see that.
And this was a complete backflip. This is absolute backflip. And what it's going to cost, it's phenomenal. This is going to bankrupt most of the country, I think, the exorbitant carbon tax that's been put on everything. Because when you look at it right up the food chain, you know, the tax on everything right through the economic process, by the time it gets to the consumer, nothing will be affordable. It's absolutely shocking.
Well, and that's, I think, one of the solutions, and I think I talked about that in one of the recent little just videos we put on there. That was just a little talk that we had there the one night. That's what I tell people is the consumerism. If you really want to fight the corporations and the government, you got to stop the consumerism.
Well, yeah.
So stop buying useless crap you don't need. Stop buying all that junk that's at Walmart that's made in China that's good for one use that goes in the garbage anyways. All of it. I mean, turn the power off in your home for one weekend. And you'll find out how much useless crap you really have in your home.
Yeah, well, that's true as well. And people have got to get into gardens, Dean. People have got to start becoming a little bit more self-sufficient. I've been telling people for years, you know, you've got to have community around you. You've got to start producing your own food because we can all do it. Everybody's got a little plot of land somewhere, even if you've just got a garden box in your apartment. Just something. Start getting something a little bit sustainable. If you had a whole apartment building and everyone was growing a different vegetable on their balcony, you could share with the whole building. I mean, this is another way to even get to know your neighbours and get to know your community.
Because, absolutely.
Well, once we all start establishing our rights and start establishing the real trust that we're supposed to be in, the best way to enforce it and the best way to stand in that power is if you've got people around you standing with you. And that's why you have to build community, break down the barriers, and get to know your neighbors. It's so
important. Well, yeah. Everything government does is meant to keep us in our house at night watching TV so we don't know who our neighbors are. We don't connect with anybody. We just want to go to Safeway and get our, you know, get our one-month shopping trip over with of all the crap we're going to shove in our freezer that's just horrible for you. And it has been taxed at 20 levels of transportation before it even got to Safeway in the first place. So, no, we really have to get away. It's not, you know, even if you don't want to fully disconnect, like we're not saying, you know, become somebody in the woods where you're just living off of a wood stove and hunting and gathering for food. Just start to disconnect from what we obviously know are our control mechanisms, which is the television. All this crap and nonsense we're convinced that we should be buying just to be like, you know, you don't want to be the only person on your street without a Blu-ray player, do you? Like, it's just ridiculous now.
Yeah, it is. And I'd really like to see people realize that they hold the power and that the government are our employees. That's the whole thing. I mean, when you look at the world, you look at the illegal wars that we're involved in, and even the stuff that's been done to the food chain through Monsanto and genetic modification of food, that there's so much going on the planet, the starving, the wailing, the homelessness, all of this stuff. And I see that all of the issues that we face, there's so many of them, they are all symptoms of the one problem. The one problem is the corruption of the system itself, and that exists because of our failure to stand in our power, our failure to stand in our equity and to take accountability, you know, hold our governments accountable. And it's us. It's absolutely us. It's our failure to take responsibility that has allowed this whole situation to happen. And it's all, the whole system is designed to divide us. So obviously unity is the key.
You know, when I first stopped paying taxes and used to talk about this kind of stuff with people, even friends of yours, the first thing they'd say is, well, I have to pay taxes, you should too.
Yeah.
You know, that was like an actual viable argument for people at times. They'd be like, well, if I have to pay taxes, then you should pay your share too. Like, you know, it's okay if that guy's getting beaten about the head as long as you're getting beaten about the head too.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, you say, but you don't have to pay taxes. That's the thing. And they go,
take responsibility for their lives and learn and you know, take a stance against the government like the rest of us, then it's not my fault if you're just going to keep paying.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. People, they really don't get it. And a lot of people, I mean, when I was talking about this the other day at a workshop, someone said to me, oh, but what about the taxpayer? What about the strain it's going to put on them? And I had to explain to them that, you know, your taxes, don't pay for all this infrastructure. Your taxes actually pay off the government's loan to a private bank. That's why you have a tax on labor. There's a tax on everything anyway. There's petrol tax, which will pay for the roads. There's tax on everything which should be used to support the infrastructure. But the tax on your labor, the tax on your wages, where does that go? What does that support? All of the things. I mean, the interest-based money system, I think this is something we really need to address. And the way to address that is, again, it all comes back to this. It all comes back to taking responsibility for ourselves and realizing that our governments are the trustees of the power that we give them, and that they're all acting in breach of trust, every single one of them.
Yeah, no, there's no question there, and you're right. I mean, the government's being funded by all these taxes on our food, on everything. There's multiple taxes. There's dozens of taxes on every item. Every item you purchase, there's dozens of taxes on that before it wound up on the shelves. So just spending your that's another point of power that we have, is just where you decide to spend your money. It kind of changes and alters government's ability to collect taxes, and those departments with those taxes go towards. So,
yeah, I'd like to see is the interest taken off money, to be honest, Dean. I'd like to see them introduce an honest money supply that didn't support this international bank cartel.
That's not going to happen from our government. We're going to have to start something over again, something new ourselves as people, I think, before we see that happen.
Well, it would be a wonderful thing. I mean, if enough people can come into their power and wake up to who and what they are, maybe we could achieve something like that. But it would certainly take a groundswell of people to understand how money works. I think
I think it could be more local. There's all sorts of stories have been out of the United States already, and I mean, this has happened throughout history, that as soon as the economy starts to see some turmoil like it does, you got certain counties in the United States that start printing their own county bucks and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
And the projects get an incredible amount of interest, and apparently the county these people live in will print their own dollars, or the town they live in will print their own dollars that people can use to go around and spend, and they get their own little microeconomy going that actually turns out to be incredibly successful.
Well, probably because there's no interest attached to it, brother.
Exactly.
That's the thing. So we've got to get the interest off money. All of the problems that we face in society, I mean, most of them can be traced, even the crime problems, unless they're crimes of passion. The crime usually comes from people being in a state of shortage. That's why they go and steal. You know, they're fed this complete misconception of what reality is from the television. They think that they're a lesser person if they don't have the latest pair of exploding shoes. So they go out and steal them, you know, because they can't make enough money to ever buy them because of the taxes and interest on everything. And so we need to get the interest off money because this brings nations to their knees, the interest on money. Look at Africa. It was fine before when we went over and introduced a monetary supply to the place. You know, that's what this system has done. This is what these three city states have done. They've gone out and they've imposed this system of shortage upon everybody. And then they just used it to milk all the wealth and transfer it into the trust that was created back in the 1400s.
Yep. Well, actually, even back to the point you made there about there being so much crime because of people want to go out and they want to have the newest exploding sneakers and all this kind of stuff. I think a lot of it is actually due to the fact that with the debts and the way society's modeled right now, and everybody's doing the same humdrum 9-to-5 job, and everybody feels like no matter what you do, you have almost no effect on your life. And I think that's what makes people creates a lot of frustration out there, and actually a lot of crime where it just seems to be senseless violence. There's just a lot of frustration out there because every single one of us, or most of us, 99% of us, unless you're incredibly wealthy, we really cannot ever do much to change our lives. We really have no effect on our life every time we try to change something. We still have these debts we got to pay off. We still got to go to work at 9 o'clock on Monday morning. We're gonna have a mortgage until we're 55. Everybody's life is the same. And they can't seem to get out of the rut that their life is. So there's frustration with having no ability to control your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's very much of that. And we're all fed this misconception of what our lives should be by the television. You know, you've got to be like this. And if you're not like this, then you're a lesser person. And we're going to ensure that you are never anything like this and that you never have the things that we promise you can get. We're going to make sure that you work really hard and you never, ever really find out who and what you are. And that's what our whole society is designed to do, and it's very sad to see. I think people are waking up to it. I really do. I think we're having a huge awakening happen across the planet.
Yeah, there's no question of that.
Oh, it's great to be part of it. So listen, what do you hope to achieve with all this? A lot of people are probably asking now, what are these free men hope to achieve? What do they want to do? What do you want to see by going down the path that you've chosen to go from? What do you hope the result will be?
Ah, boy, you know what? I'm all over the place on that one. I don't even know myself what the end results I want here to have are. I mean, I know myself, personally speaking, I just want to be able to get in my car and go home at the end of the day and not be, you know, pulled over and beaten and thrown in jail for the weekend without having to get a government plate and jump through all their hoops and you know, do everything that I'm told to do by the government. I just want to be left alone for the most part. So I think, personally speaking, is everything I see, if the only way to achieve my very small ambition of just being left alone and wanting to go home and plant a garden on the weekends and not have to be abused by the government, if that means I got to go out there and I got to wake up and, you know, wake up or provide this information for everybody so that we can get enough of us out there that are letting the government know that we just don't want to do, we just don't want to live by under their yoke anymore, with enough of us, then you have the numbers you need to then be able to see small little goals like that achieved, I guess. That's a small-scale one. On the bright side, maybe we can get the whole world to wake up here and realize the corporations are killing and poisoning us and our planet's dying, and get a whole kind of grassroots movement here where everybody just wants to go back to basics and get rid of government out of their lives. Not get rid of government, just out of their lives, and get bankers out of their pockets and get rid of income taxes, get rid of property taxes, and just start to enjoy life again.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I've been saying as well that, I mean, government is a creation of us. You know?
It's a tool. It was meant for a purpose. The only problem is it's, you know, we forgot to shut it off. Power drill running on the counter, so we have to get control of it again.
Yeah, because we created this society for the benefit of humanity, and yet now we have a humanity which is completely enslaved to the society that we created. So how does this work? How does this benefit humankind in any way at all? It benefits a very, very few at the top. But if there's legislations and laws that are being enacted that, well, I shouldn't say laws, but statutes that are being enacted which actually impinge upon the ability of humanity to be all that they can be, then why do we even perceive these things to be something worthy of obedience?
Well, and they're really not, and that's another thing, too, is actually I was laughing about it because somebody online that had watched one of my videos the next day went out to one of the courthouses in their area, and they just were filming some police officers and went up and asked one of the police officers, like, hey, excuse me, I have a question for you. And the guy's like, oh, yeah. And this lady said to the cop on camera, do you recognize the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? And the guy laughed and said no, and then walked away. So we have to understand that that's actually it's back to what you were just talking about there, because it has some relevancy, and I've gotten a little off topic here. But if you could, people out there can do something as simple as taking a copy of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and mailing that to their attorney general with a little cover letter that says, "You guys are a signatory to this. How come you're not respecting it?" Or for your own specific purposes, like, hey, just so you're aware, there's this thing called Universal Declaration of Human Rights out there, and I want you guys to recognize it when it comes to my legal person.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying there, and I've actually looked at the Declaration of Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and I've had similar thoughts. But I'll tell you.
But it doesn't exist to these guys unless you're throwing it in their face.
But I'll tell you, they're sneaky. They're sneaky, Dean. And once I started getting into the trust law, and once I started getting an understanding of equity, I read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights again, and I gave it to a couple of friends of mine who are very, very clever and very knowledgeable on trust law, and they looked at this document, and they said, with the wording of this document, when you look at the definitions of the words that they've used, get out Black's Law Dictionary and actually look at the definitions of these words, and what the document actually does is it removes equity from everybody and puts the entire world in law, in statute law. That's what it does. It actually removes every single right that it's claiming to support.
I'm sure if you follow the definitions and the letters that are used in that document, that's probably the case. The problem is, it's almost like what it really does is the opposite of the intent of the document on its face.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at it, you go, this is a beautiful thing. This is what we need. We need all these rights. But the thing is, we have all these rights already. And what the document does is it actually removes them. And this is something similar to what they've done here with Aboriginal land rights here in Australia. They've put out something called Native Title Claim in Australia. So these people are so sneaky, Dean. Nothing that this government or establishment puts out that looks like it's there to help you actually does. It's always designed to do the opposite of what it says it's doing. They're very sneaky. Aboriginal land native title here in Australia, they've put out this thing called, okay, look, we're sorry, we've taken all this land from the original people of the country. We want to give it back to them. So we've established native title claim. So if you're one of the original people, which we will call Aboriginal people, but they're actually original people, we won't even get into that.
There you go.
Yeah, we won't even get into that one, but I call them original people. The government calls them Aboriginal. Well, they say, okay, any Aboriginal people, you want to claim some land, here's this native title, you can just apply for native title. But what it says in the document is that we will reinstate title to any land that was colonized by the Crown. Okay, so when the Aboriginal people sign off on this, what they are admitting to is that the land was colonized by the Crown. So that gives the Crown title to the land, because the Crown doesn't have any title to land in Australia. There was no battle, there was no invasion, there was no treaty. The original people of this country are still the owners of this country. The Crown doesn't actually own Australia. And this has been a real bee in their bonnet for a long time. But what native title does is it gets the original people to acknowledge that the land was colonized by the Crown, and that they're now giving title back to the original people, which means the original people will be subject to all these land taxes and rates and fees that they won't be able to pay, and in another 5 or 10 years, they'll have to forfeit their land to the Crown.
Yeah, and then the Crown can say, no, look, we gave their land back, but they didn't know how to manage it properly, and they lost it all again through loans.
Exactly. It's exactly what they're doing. Because at the moment, the original people can virtually just go anywhere in this country. Any land they want, they can just set up, and they can set up a campsite, and they can live there. And there's nothing anybody can do about it because they own the country. And there's no way to dispute that. There's no document that can be tabled which shows that the Crown has any claim to this land. So this is the way they do it. And again, we went up to a meeting on the Gold Coast last week. I went up there with some original elders and with a legal spokesman. And what we were presented with was a federal panel that was attempting to make changes to the Australian Constitution to acknowledge Aboriginal rights in the Constitution. You know, like these poor people, they're downtrodden. We wish to lift them up to the level of the rest of the country so that they've got the same rights as everybody else.
Yeah, and that's the way to suck them into the legislation.
Absolutely. And they lose all sovereignty of their country and are subject to British rule. So they don't tell you that bit. They make it sound all nice, but it's actually
Well, you know what?
Opposite.
That's exactly why you had all those people in California there for years in the United States that were talking about. They were all pissed off because in California, I guess they wanted to give all the illegal aliens driver's licenses. And they're pissed off. No, that's recognition. They're going to be able to apply for all these benefits now. And the whole nine yards, they don't really realize that what the government was actually doing was trying to get all these illegal immigrants some form of government ID so that they actually had jurisdiction over them now.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. Whereas now these people, basically, they're in the country illegally. They don't have to obey any statutes. So when they're pulled over, the state can't prosecute.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're more free than you are.
Absolutely. Everything the government does that it looks like it's trying to help you, it's not. They do not have your best interest at heart. They do not act on your behalf whatsoever.
The government has no jurisdiction over you if you're an illegal alien, which means there's no contract at all, and that's why they can't prosecute you. So that's got to let you know that it's not real laws where there's an injured party that's being defended. There's no contract to enforce with these people.
Yeah, they're very, very sneaky, Dean.
Uh-huh.
So where are you going to be taking this from now on? What's your next step, brother?
I think one of the big keys to freedom, aside from people knowing who they are and the fact that if there's no contract, there's no obligation. So those are the four words you need to know with what we're teaching. No contract, no obligation. And what that means is if I have no contract with you, you're under no obligation to perform.
Well, that's very wise words, and we're going to have to end it there because it's about the end of the show. It's been a pleasure having you on. We'll have to stay in touch, and I'll try to have you on again soon when you've got a little bit further down the track.
Well, it's nice how you're going. I have an answer for you as to whether or not you can collect on these.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'll get you back on then. I'll get you back on in 6 weeks, and we'll see how you went with your fee schedule.
That sounds good, but I think if I have an answer sooner, you're probably going to find out a lot sooner in 6 weeks. So.
Well, not a problem. Keep me posted, brother. Okay, nice talking to you. Pleasure to have you on.
Awesome. All right, you have a good one there.
I will.
Bye-bye.
So that was Dean Clifford, folks, and quite a remarkable individual, and it's very nice to see people taking this type of a stand. And I think what Dean has brought to the table is truly wonderful, and it provides a very, very simple understanding of trust law to people. I highly recommend that you check out his video clips. There is a link to his videos on the Crow House, so you can simply go there and click the link, and you can check out all of the workshops that he's done. We're going to have to leave it there today. We're completely out of time. It has been a pleasure talking to you again today, and I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. In La Cache.